Hi, I'm Nick Gill, International Strength and Conditioning Coach. I've been working with the All Blacks for the past 15 years and have been part of two successful Rugby World Cups. I love to coach rugby players and I love to see them succeed on and off the field. And now, I can be part of your rugby journey. Rugby Ready is my way of sharing my knowledge and experience with the greater rugby community through our online coaching platforms, our training programs and our educational resources. Rugby Ready is here to provide tried and tested training methods, information and direct access to top coaches so you can maximise your rugby career. Whether you're a youth player just starting out or you're on the senior team at your local club or striving for higher honours, we have individualised plans and provide the support you need to achieve your success.
If you want to dominate on the pitch and reach your full potential, go to our Instagram page at Rugby Ready, click the link in our bio, and fill out the brief application. From there, we'll get in touch with you within 24 hours to start your Rugby Ready journey. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Rugby Ready podcast. I'm your host, Bucky, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, Dr. Nick Gill, who's ready to rock and caffeinated as always. On this episode, we have a very special guest who's currently plying his trade over in Japan with Toyota Verblitz. And he goes back a ways with Gilly during his time with the All Blacks, where he firmly cemented himself as New Zealand's top scrum half. Welcome to none other than Aaron Smith. Welcome to the podcast, yeah. Man.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me. And sorry, I probably put this off two or three times, but kids, World Cup and Japan, it just sort of... But now I'm home in the off season. It's just great to be able to connect and see my old mate Gilly again. And probably reminisce a bit and hopefully give some insight.
It's awesome, man. Are you able to, like now that you're back home, do you feel like you've been had a bit of a chance to breathe and relax? Or I guess having kids, it's maybe a little bit hard.
Nah, kids is easy in the sense of being home and that. But rolling from last year till end of May was pretty tough. Getting to Japan, kind of felt the energy and the mental going, and I haven't had that in a long time. And with the hangover of the World Cup and just rolling on again, it was good. And obviously Japan as well, just adjusting to that lifestyle and being able to play every game was cool. But it was the one time once we sort of missed the playoffs, I was sort of looking at the calendar going, okay, three more weeks kind of thing. And I usually don't like at the end, but I was excited for a break to fill my cup. And I've been home about a month and I feel totally refreshed and excited about sort of hooking into some training again at a high intensity. But it's been brilliant to just be home, be in New Zealand and just be still for a bit.
Awesome, man. That's awesome. So we love to, I know you and Gilly know each other like very, very well. But we love to start the podcast off with a bit of a speed round just to break the ice. So we figure we'll give you 60 seconds. I'll run a timer to get through six questions. If you get through the six, then when Gilly comes to your city, he owes you dinner. How about that?
Oh, I'd love to see his wallet. That'd be awesome.
I'm gonna have to find it, Bucky. You put me on the spot here, mate. I don't know where my wallet is.
Let's go.
All right, so I'm gonna get my timer set.
Go.
And we're gonna jump in here. All right, so you ready? 3, 2, 1. Here we go. Thor, Hulk, or Black Panther?
Thor, always.
Black Thor. White. Not, yeah, Thor is good, but I would have gone Hulk personally. Flat white.
The hammer, man. The hammer.
Flat white, Steinlager, or Guinness?
Flat white. Love it. Triple shot.
Oh, rocket fuel. Dumbbell curl, incline treadmill, or a bench press?
Dumbbell curl. Try and get some beach muscles.
Dumbbell curl while walking on the treadmill, ain't no.
Yeah, just like.
Who's more competitive, you or TJ Perenara?
TJ, I'd say. He wants to win any. And I'm competitive, but he's next level. He's unreal.
Yeah, he'll race you to eat dinner, eh? No, he just...
Yeah, anything.
Yeah.
He doesn't like losing.
Who is... the teammate who's one of your teammates with either the stinkiest shoes or the messiest room?
Israel Dev. I think he's been thrown around a lot. I only roomed with him a few times, but it was just like he got in the room and his suitcase exploded and stayed like that till we left the room, till we left the hotel that week. So I'm glad he always sort of roomed with CJ for most of it. But yeah, the old time you get chucked with him, he never had training shorts or hats or socks for some reason, and he'd steal everyone's.
Yeah, I think it's because...
Love your dagger.
He used to sell all the stuff, eh, Nick?
He got a big family, I'll be honest there. He got a big family. We all do.
Who is team's going to win a boat race? Team Smith or Team Gill?
Oh, Gilly's pretty good, and he lived in Dunners a long time. I don't know. We were pretty close, especially in my heyday, my mid-20s. I could chug it back, but not now.
Definitely Team Smith. Team Smith all day long. Gilly's an old man now. So I'm just wondering, how's our clock going,
Bucky? Oh, dude, we're so far over. Aaron owes you dinner. Yeah.
That's good, mate. That's good.
Yes.
Love it. That was great, man. Thanks for doing that with us.
Cool.
So, look, I'm really interested, actually, one of the questions I asked was about the treadmill walking. I'm really interested in that topic. I know in one of your videos that was brought up, that's something that you do regularly. So how many days of the week do you do that? For how long do you do it? And do you think for yourself, like, that habit has had a big impact on your sort of aerobic base and your recovery?
Yeah, I think we're not really turning the corner of my training to trying to get the max out of what I could get in my career. It was it's sort of like a bodybuilding thing. They would do a low incline walk to burn calories. And for me, my skin folds used to fluctuate quite a bit with my diet and stuff. And when you train less and play more, you kind of can't eat the same and stuff like that. And it actually it started off as a bit of a gag to help recover. And then it became looking into it more, talking with Gilly and other trainers around, will it have any negative harm with the Ks per week? And they were all the same, as it's just a good way to wake your body up. So I started it, 5 years ago, sort of 6 years ago. And for me, it was like in a normal training week, a great way to start my Sunday after a game. And I'd do it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then, but it was more like the get up, do the incline walk, have a bit of a stretch, and then a cold shower. And then I felt like, it started your day strong, and I'd do 500 calorie incline, hang on. And at the end, you probably just get out of a sweat, if anything. You're not like dripping. So it was just like a little mental edge thing for me. And also, I kind of liked, especially when you're in team environments, that if you walk in the room at breakfast or the first meeting, you're like, I'm already ahead of you. There's other players doing similar things, but it was always a nice mental edge to have, like, I'm already one step ahead today. And then it kind of compounds, but it kept me lean. I didn't always want to get up, but I always felt good after. And then other times you're feeling fresher and that, you can make it longer, more calories or whatever. But for me, it was that mental edge of like walking into the room, and I always wanted to try and outwork my peers or have that mental edge. And it always felt like, for me, I've got up early, I've drunk 800 mils of water. And then you're already fasting from sleeping. So it's sort of like that edge. And then it actually made me feel good about having a good big breakfast or eating consistently, because I knew that I was already at a good spot. And that was sort of the main crux of it. And then I've had a lot of boys ask about it coming back from injuries or why. And I just gave them the positive reason of that. It helped me keep my weight down, stay lean, which is key for, trying to be high repetitions of fitness. And like I said, the biggest one for me that I got the kick out of was getting that mental edge of being able to, I wouldn't go around saying I'm ahead of you today, but I knew it. And I knew that I'd done something today, and a lot of you may not have.
Nice, Nuggie. Nice, mate. There's some good insight there into the why and the what. Nug, just something that obviously as a nine, as a halfback, as a scrum half, you're not the biggest man out in the park. And you know, you especially, you know, in a game, you can often hear you screaming at all the big boys that are about three times your size where they need to be, what they need to do. Like, did you have that ability or that confidence to lead and instruct people early on, or did it take time to sort of develop those skills, mate?
Well, I think, yeah, halfbacks sort of, if you're a smaller guy, you naturally have the small man syndrome trait of telling everyone what to do. But I think I wasn't always as vocal, but I think the more coaches were talking and the more you upskill as a player, the you are yelling in that, but you're just trying to help them big boys in front of you. So keep the energy up, but also you're kind of communicating, I've got your back, I'm here, move there. Like some of the boys, they'll come out of a scrum for 25 seconds and they're seeing stars and they're knackered. And I just want to help them get to the right position. And that, because on attack, I don't speak at all. I'm just running and listening as fast as I can to where do we need to go. And then defensively and around, especially on D, you just want to communicate to the big boys of counting numbers and being their second eyes, really, because they are in a little bit of autopilot because they're knackered. And go from a maul or a scrum or open plays, or especially when a play goes past sort of 1 or 2 minutes, they don't see anything because they're just trying to get to where they think they need to get to. And if you can help them save energy by maybe stop, don't come around the ruck, or carry on, we're low. And yeah, you get the odd bark back when you're a bit too aggressive. But I think over my time, I learned where to be impactful with the comms instead of just maybe yelling for the sake of it.
Nice, mate. Because that ties in well to sort of knowing your teammates too, eh? Like some guys, some guys sort of need a quiet whisper, and some guys need a bit more verbal, louder instruction. Like that awareness of your teammates and how best to communicate with them, is that something that I suppose you developed? I think you sort of said you have developed that, but it's important, isn't it? Like people respond to different types of communication. Do you think you're good at that?
I think I'm good at reading body language, but I think we did the SAS stuff in 2015 around that clap, clear, loud, with pauses, I think it was, or...
As an order with pause.
And I remember that clearly was, in the heat of the moment, you're allowed to be direct, you're allowed to be clear, but we also got told, like, use names. You hear your name get called, you do hear it, like, you listen. And in between plays, I think, I'm not trying to be hurt for anything. Like I said, I'm just trying to communicate where to go and help them. And I think a lot of players that played with me hopefully felt like that. I might have saved them 10 metres running or helped them make a tackle or a turnover. And I also wanted to communicate really well, Gilly, so I didn't have to tackle. So, but it's such a, like a chess piece thing of that, is trying to just read where to go, what to do, and where we need our boys to get to. And that grew over time. But in between plays is where I think, you know, reading guys like to G up. I'd always challenge players that liked it. Like Artie, I'd always be into him like, hey, time to wake up, or I need you now. And he enjoyed that. And you're always connecting with your tens to see how they're going. It's not always a question of the game of like, how do we think we're going when we're obviously not going great? It's about like, oh, what do you think we can tweak? Or talking to your captain around, do we need a lift or that? But I was lucky over time you knew when to kind of stay calm and knew when to rev up. Yep. It's reading the situation of the energy, but also you need to read the other leaders in the group. And so you don't come in and step on stuff outside your area. So I was mainly in D group, and I was big one on body language. So as long as your own body language was strong and I nailed my defensive points. I wouldn't say in a huddle or anything, something about attack in front of the team. I'd go and ask Richie or Bodie, hey, we're getting a bit wide on our runners off nine, or where's the space? Is the blind side open? Yeah, Fozzie helped me a lot with those probing questions without how do I get an answer from a back that isn't me telling them what to do, but you kind of have an idea of what the answer is. But yeah, you know what I mean? You got to like,
yeah, 100%.
They're the boss, yeah. But like maybe they don't see that because they've got so much to worry about.
Yeah,
they do. They run the game, but you, I see and feel a lot. And then also sometimes you need to have that forward you can talk to about, oi, boys, we are off. We need to switch on. And guys like Brody and, you know, your aggressive players, for those, like, spike points are good. Like, made our clean outs late and we're passive. Like, we need to get into it. So let's wake up. And that can't come from me when I clean one or two rucks a game, you know. So
that's right.
Learning that comms is you can't, just because you know the answer to everything, you can't say it because it won't have the impact coming from the right guys.
Yeah, nice, mate. That's incredibly detailed insight as to ways to communicate out on the battlefield. So, mate, thanks for that.
Yeah, that was huge. Sorry, I muted myself. My little boy's in the background just having a time. So
I get that. Awesome.
Yeah. He's just giggling away. So, look, I hope I've got the date right, but from what I could read, back in 2008 was sort of your major breakthrough into international rugby where you played for the under-20s. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. And now if we think about it, like 16 years later, you're still playing at essentially the highest level of the game. So for yourself, what would you say like some of your – like how do you manage your body and take care of it over such a long period of time to still be able to do what you do?
I think we were talking with Gilly, me and Sam Wallach around, like we've both been blessed injuries wise, but more we were talking like we're not, I think Gilly put it like, you're not too fast, you're not really flexible, but you're not unflexible. Your power to weight strength's good, but yeah, you're sort of like a Hilux is what we called it. Like I was like a Corolla, he was like a Hilux, but more that sense of fast people crash hard, bang hard, you know, like they break easy, but will break often. But yeah, I think I'm in that little sweet spot for a nine of not too quick, can't lift too heavy, but I can lift well for my weight. And then just, like I said, you get lucky with the type of injuries in your career. And but as you go on and progress as a professional and look after your body, you know, I love the quote, you know, like the harder you work, the luckier you get. And, you know, in rugby, you're one moment away from being out for 9 months, you know, like anything can happen, even at training, even in the gym. But, you know, I was a big one of always training hard out that, you know, nothing. If you get injured, you get injured because you're going hard. I'd hate to always get injured. I'd hate to have got injured by going half-assed and breaking for that. At least be, you know, Gilly would tell me off all the time about slowing it down. And but, yeah, it's just I'd rather that than getting told you need to pick it up, you know. So I think that lucky with my body type, I think that's a big one for longevity. But also my mental attitude of maximizing my opportunities. And, you know, I was pretty blessed to make the All Blacks after a good Super Rugby, but then getting in the All Blacks and changing my mindset of what's possible, and then learning from like Gilly is a big one of like what an All Black standard is, fitness and weight and skin folds and things I thought, you know, I was all good at. To be a great All Black, all good's not good enough. And to have staying power at this level, it takes a lot of effort, planning and execution. And then also being good enough to still be open to learning and open to feedback and finding new things to energize you, but motivate you, because it can become same. And I think I saw that in a lot of players who first 2 or 3 years, they come in and they doing all the extras, they're doing all that, and then they hit that kind of middle of their career and that sort of they play all right at Super and they get in, but I always wanted to earn the jersey, and that was the big driver for me. So even when I was in the summer holidays or in the Highlanders, I wanted to be named in the All Blacks, you know, and earn it, not use your past accolades to make the team, or he knows how to play test rugby, so we'll pick him. I always wanted to kind of earn my way, and then, you know, when you get into the elite teams, it is easier because you can just worry about yourself. And then as you grow and learn a lot more, I think it's easier to prepare, but you've got to keep refreshing your goals, refreshing your mindset, because especially in the weeks when they're not dead rubbers and that, but they're just a game that you're not playing for a trophy or something, you know, you've got the other weeks, I think, yeah, see people and players lose traction because they kind of have a lower week, where for me, I always wanted to just maximize each day, and if I get a little bit better today, it'll help me when it counts, you know.
I was going to be, it's interesting. Go ahead, Gilly.
No, you go, bro. You go, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that, I mean, to circle back to the very beginning part of your answer, like you said, you're a, was it a Corolla?
Yeah. You know, they go.
No way.
That's because he plays for Toyota. That's because he plays for Toyota now, see?
Yeah, smart. We'll give them a plug. Yeah. We'll do a collab with. That's funny. Boom. New Corolla dropping soon.
I love the comment you made, because I think this is a really important, especially for young listeners out there, that I think, if I used your words, hard work creates opportunities.
Was that what you said, mate? The harder you work, the luckier you get.
Beautiful. So you know, a lot of people think that you know, being a professional athlete's easy. And you know, I was lucky to work with you for a long time, and I remember when we first met, you know, that you were a possum in headlights. You'd come in, you were selected in the All Blacks because you're an amazing player. But over time, and we touched on that last question, you know, 16 years the top of your game, not many people do that. And you're still doing it. So I suppose something that we're interested in, because this is sort of what we do, is and you've touched on it briefly, I just want you to just how important is your body? Like, how important is strength and conditioning and keeping your body ready to go? I mean, you already touched on your morning routines sometimes. You touched on nutrition and body composition, and being resilient in terms of injuries. Like how important is looking after your body and staying fit? You know, strength and conditioning, the right program for you, the evolution of the program. You know, like, what's your thoughts on that?
I think that is one thing. I thought I got fit in 2011 to play Super Rugby, and I did. And then I came into that first camp and you said, yeah, 2 kg's too heavy. You are 10 mils too fat. And like, if you drop the kgs and the mils, you'll be able to run level 19 on the yo-yo. And I was like, oh, okay. But that was like, obviously, in the back of my head going, okay. And I remember by test one, I was in the 60s and my weight was 81 kgs. And I was like, ready. But what I learned in that first year around and seeing was how well the Kevin Mialamus, the Sonny Bills, the Dan Carters, and the Richie McCaws looked after their body. And I was way off. But you're around it and you push it with all of our stuff. And when you start figuring out, the trainer knows, and the more as we connected and learning from creating programs that work for me, like, I'm pretty top heavy with my training, like in the early part of the week, so I can trust and relax at the end. But I think the mentality for your body it's your tool. And like, when I figured that out and when I got my weight right, my skin folds right, my fitness levels are right, I had no fear on the field of being able to go 80 minutes, or fear of letting my team down. And And it becomes addictive, that feeling of being able to play a game and not be in awe of being tired or the crowd. It's been, that's the best part of the week is Saturday. Been hissing on Saturday, and I don't want to go in there like, oh, I feel a bit sluggish because I didn't train. Like, you becomes addictive. And when you see results, when you make teams, that's the rush is I'm doing this extra ice bath and sauna and stretching to be good for tomorrow. So then tomorrow I can be good for, you know, the next day. And beautiful. Then yeah. Come Saturday, you're like, I just go out there and you're free and just play and have fun.
So, mate, I want to take you back. So let's say you could jump in a time machine, go back and see Aaron Smith when he was 19, 20, and give him some advice. What advice would you have given yourself?
Stop eating and drinking. I think I trained, you know, when you're 20, but you're not that, you don't have your man weight yet. Like, if I went out on the booze, I'd lose 2 kgs, like, without even trying, you know. But then your hangover feed was terrible too. So I'd say stop drinking as much and stop eating. I was eating. The skimpod said it. Like, I look back at it and it's like, yeah. But it wasn't a big thing. I don't think it wasn't a month or two. And at Super, it wasn't like as accountable as, you know, like, I remember in the All Blacks, if you were skimpod day with Cat, everyone would be asking, what'd you get? Like, if you were up, boys would be like, how are you up in this environment? You know, like, you've got to be doing some plan up stuff with the level of training you put us through. Like, so, you know, but that kind of judgment and that, you know, I was always kind of tubby fella coming through school. And I love the challenge of it every morning, jumping on the scales and like, oh yes, I've got it. Like, for me, those little tick boxes were like real critical and helped. In my position, it's key because if I had extra weight, I couldn't run like I needed to. I couldn't hit my high mats and I couldn't play the way I wanted to. And my early part of my All Black career, by all means, I would fluctuate during the season. And then I remember working with you around, how do we make sure that come the end of your tour, I've still got gas? And, you know, we got to a real sweet spot with that. And that helped me use the year to get, it was a whole year plan, not a Super Rugby then, oh, if I make, it was like a whole year I want to be at this level, tapering, going hard, and, you know, getting to that end of year tour, walking off the last game, not broken, like, I could still go, but I need a break. And my first two or three end of year tours, I remember being pretty busted and keep talking to you in those last meetings of the year, like, man, how do I keep building and trying to not feel like this? And, you know, the last sort of 5-6 years of my career, being able to come in fit and then finish strong in the years, I think, is the key and something I was most proud of.
Nice, mate. Nice. That's awesome. Over to you, Bucky.
Aaron, I'm really interested to know, like, just, you know, Gilly, I think it's a Kiwi thing, so correct me if I'm wrong. I get the impression based on the people that I've met there, like, you guys tend to be, like, really direct and blunt. So how do you go, right?
No, that's Canadian.
Like, no, I'm serious. Like, you know, if you come here, like, it's funny, all the skits about Canadians saying sorry. Like, it's just true. We just don't have that, I guess, in our makeup. But I'm curious to know how you deal with that, because some people, like, they would, you know, if Gilly basically said in a roundabout way, like, hey man, look, you're a little too fat and you're a little too slow, some people would shut down from that. Or they would have like problems taking on that sort of criticism. How do you deal with that and sort of use it as fuel instead of, you know, a kick in the ass or a kick to your ego?
I think I had a lot of adversity in my early career, like school and then coming out of school, of missing teams. And some of the, and when Gilly gave me the, after my first one-on-one with him, like, you're fat and you're slow and you could be fitter. Like, I was fit, but, you know, I could be fitter. But then when I got in the All Blacks, I could see there was another level, you know, and it was glaringly obvious. And then even just like going to the pool, I could see I had a boy body and the other boys look like men, you know, and I know I'm small, but they look different. And to me, I was like, okay, there's a visual here. Not saying that was the driver, but it was like, he's right. Obviously, I was like 22, but like, oh, yeah, I'm in the All Black camp. Here we go. And then this trainer's just like, bang. But it's how you take it. And I'd always been told I couldn't do it, but he wasn't saying I couldn't do anything. He was just saying you could get better and you can be better and I'll help you if you got to start doing some work. And the 2 weeks from that meeting to the squad being named, I felt like I did another preseason, but I enjoyed the challenge. And I think that's the mentality of the individual. And I think that's what's missing a little bit in some of our younger players, is that being able to just be told, they're not telling you it to hurt you, they're telling you it to you because they care and they want you to be better. And I never took that stuff as obviously some of it stings, but don't always think about where that's coming from. And if you're able to take feedback, they're usually right, because they're in that position for a reason, and not getting caught up on it. And, you know, obviously navigating some. If some feels way off, go and talk to them privately, but they usually bang on. And when Gilly, like, that changed my career around, hey, and it took, I was playing really well that year, and then I was able to transfer that to Test Rugby pretty quickly, which was surprising to me as well. But I was in a great team and just doing my job. But over that first 4 years, I reckon it was like cycles for me of taking my game to another level through what I saw and what I picked up as I went. Okay, that didn't work, and that works for me. And then, you know, my last 8 years, I really enjoyed the challenge of every day trying to be a better player.
That's cool. Lucky,
that's that's amazing, because that sort of flows into what I wanted to ask around. Yeah, like I witnessed you firsthand, you know, from the sideline in the gym, going from being a nine for your province, a nine for your professional team, the Highlanders, and then come to the All Blacks. And you said the word yourself, like, reinvent yourself often. And like I remember hearing the selectors talk about you before you were picked in the All Blacks, and you made the team because of your pass, right? Mm. You know, your pass was electric. You're the fastest clearer of the ball. And that maintained a strength throughout your whole career. But you also evolved in so many other areas. And I suppose for the listeners, for the young listeners out there, like, a lot of people will pour a lot of energy into the gym, into their nutrition, and into, you know, team trainings. But how did you actually fit in all the extra development, you know, extra passing drills, extra kicking drills? Like, how do you keep getting better? Because you keep getting better for, like, I don't know how you feel about this, but you're at the top of your game when you retired from the All Blacks. You're the best nine in the world when you retired from the All Blacks. And to do that and to keep growing for 16 years takes a lot of hard work, and I think it's important for the young people out there to understand what that looks like. So just a typical week, how do you get better?
I was a big dreamer. I dream really big, and for me it wasn't extra stuff, it was a part of the journey, whether that was passing, extra fitness. It wasn't extra to me. All these boys talk about, oh, I'm doing all this extra work. That's your job. It's your job to be the best version of yourself. I don't give anyone claps for doing a bit extra. That's a given. If you want to be great and good, it costs. And I think the biggest one people don't understand, and you hear, everyone watches the videos, but like Kobe and other players, is a cost though, if you're willing to pay it. And that is family time. That is friends and family. Because to be really, really good and dedicated to something, it takes time. And if you're not willing to give up the time to do all the early mornings, late nights, that's what you'll get. You'll get what you get. And if you're brilliant, you might get all the way. But I didn't see any of it as extras. I would plan my week. I would always put things in around reading and learning stuff from other people's stories. I love watching and learning from the greats. Docos now are just so insightful, but take the bits that suit you and don't try and be that guy. So, but like I said, I had some great examples in rugby, but there's so many in other sports and things to learn. And but I wasn't scared to, when I wasn't playing well and that, to go and get help, talk to you, bro, I need to recalibrate, talk to Bert, our mental skills guy, my head's a bit full, and go talk to a coach around what they're seeing, like, and try and get that kind of every two or three games, because you can't see it all, and I can't see it all on film. Sometimes you don't want to see the bad stuff, but you go and find some feedback, you'll get it. And it might be just what you need to hear. And I also think when you are going good, go and get feedback as well. So that's the key, is to keep you grounded and keep you hungry, because, yeah, but I think you got to be willing to pay. And if you're not, that's okay. But understand it's cost me. And I was willing to pay that for my time in the All Blacks. I sit here now, playing in Japan, but I look back with no regrets of my effort for when I wore the black jersey, because that's why I played rugby. As a boy, I dreamed of playing and trying to make the All Blacks, and then somehow it happened. And when I got there, I was like, I don't ever want this to end. So how would you train and play, and how much would you give up to stay there? And, you know, my biggest thing I was most proud of was I never not got selected on selection day, you know. I didn't have the story of, yeah, I missed the team 1 year or one campaign. I was like, nah, every time I was proud of that. And, yeah, and I think 2023 was just an accumulation of all of it. I knew what to expect. I knew where I needed to go. And then I wanted to see if I could go there. And it was amazing. And I don't, like, the result wasn't ideal. But I went out in a World Cup final at the top of my game, and I took the jersey off for the last time, and I went, you know, I love you, jersey, and kapo pango, you'll be with me forever. And yeah, I didn't put it down like, oh, no, I wish. No, I did everything I could, and I put blood, sweat, and tears into that jersey. And yeah, like, I've had a lot of people, oh, you're going to miss it. I'm like, yeah, but I'll miss the random things. Things people don't get, you know, club rooms, and I miss, you know, having a coffee, stretching. Like, people think like that 7:30 to 8:30 on a Tuesday, Thursday was the funnest part of the day sometimes. And that's when we're all sitting around talking smack and, you know, but people don't get that. Like, it's not the games, it's the people. And I played for 12 years with a group of boys and coaches and management that was like, you know, the funnest part was that.
Mate, like, I got a bit tingly listening to that, Nug. Like the idea that there's no such thing as extras, and your approach to that actually you want to be the best. You just got to do what's expected to be the best, not think you're just going to get there. I mean, I think that's probably the difference between, you know, being a good player and a great player is that mindset around, you know, sacrificing things to achieve greatness, and putting in the work. That's not extra. It's just what you need to do to be the best. So I love that, mate. That's awesome.
Well, I think too, it's important they understand, like I said, the early part of my All Black career, and people say you played well. I did, but it was more the understanding it's a journey, and I knew I wanted to play a long time, and that's why I signed on for NZAU long, always, because I was committed and showing my intent. But more understand you're not the finished product straight away, and I'm still trying to get better. But you get better at certain things. You start winning things and losing things, and you get more experience, heartache, injuries, ups, downs. Like, yeah, just when you're younger, just giving yourself that break, but a real growth mindset that things are going to go good, things are going to go bad. But make sure it's not things that you can control, like your fitness, like your mental game, and the people who are telling you stuff. I think that's the things you can control. But having that attitude that, you know, you can't expect to be great without it costing something. You can't have this perfect balance in life, okay? and if you want balance, you'll have a good balanced life and a good career, no doubt. But yeah, it just depends how much they want it. And yeah, I had limited talents, and I just wanted to maximize the opportunities I got. And I think I got a bit lucky early, and then I tried to really earn everything after that.
Awesome, mate. That's powerful. It's powerful.
Do you think something too, Aaron, with like doing that sacrifice, so friend and family time, you know, you're putting in the hours, you're getting up early, you accept that and take that on board. But because it's with an athletic career, right, we know this is going to be for, well, we don't know for how long, but it's going to be for like a defined amount of time. So do you think that can kind of make it easier for people to swallow that pill, knowing this isn't forever? And then if you do make those sacrifices, you know, when you're an old guy one day, like you said, you're literally going to have no regrets. Whereas I know for myself, sometimes, you know, when I'm putting in the hours working, like building a business, you know, I miss a lot of stuff. And that sort of that guilty feeling can come in, but then you go, no, this isn't forever. This isn't forever. I got to keep going. Like, do you think people need to sort of take that on board more?
I think the word sacrifice is, like I kind of touched on before, it's like, it's not the word if you want it, you know, it's not the word used. It's the cost of what it takes to get what you want in business and life and whatever you're chasing. And it's just what you're willing to pay. I mean, like, yeah, I never saw it. I used to get a little guilty, and then I was like you said, and that's right, is I knew it was for a limited part of my life where I could make it up later. And, but, you know, I had two boys and I missed tests because of I wanted to be at their birth. Like, I'm not this drone that's like no heart. I those things mattered to me, and I missed games. But those are important because, you know, having kids is the most important thing in the world and loving them. But I was there when they were born. I might have left a week later, but or 4 days later for my first one, but I was there, like, you know, and I was there for my wife and that, but outside of that and in seasons and that, there's not much I wouldn't give up to make sure that I could sit there at night feeling good about the day. And that costs, like, your friends and that, like, your friend group is smaller. And when you're kind of in that mentality, is you kind of only talk to people that are like that. Hearing people talk about their dreamers and they, I'm going to do this or I'm starting this, and that's because they got no staying power. They just they're the ideas guy.
Brilliant.
We all know that guy or friend or whatever.
You know. Oh, we do. We do. The ideas, the talkers. That's something that, like, watching you grow as an athlete and a professional, Nug, that's definitely something that you are a doer, not a talker. Like, you know, your preparation in a week to play well on Saturday, it just got, you never talked about change. You just did change, if that makes sense. You tried something, it became part of your routine. You stuck with it. You weren't into too many fads. Like, I think that's often also what young players do, is they'll look for the next silver bullet, which is often something that's a shortcut. And you sort of got to a point where you knew exactly what you needed to do, how you needed to do it, when you needed to do it, and you just built your routines and habits without talking about it too much. I think where we're at now, Nug, is we've got lots of questions, a few from some members. So we'll kick into these. These are a bit shorter. Thank you so far. This has been awesome. But I think I'll just kick off with, you've already touched on a lot, but because a member sent it in, we'll ask it. What drives you to stay at the top after achieving so much? Like, what drove you? What was the one drive?
The one drive was probably, you know, during Super, seeing other nines go well. but the main one was to wear the black jersey. So I'd wake up and think about doing the anthem, doing the haka, playing for the All Blacks. And, you know, I never got sick of that feeling and never got sick of that dream. And that was my dream. And so I'd wake up and, you know, that's what I want to be, and that's what I want to do. And I'm lucky that I was able to do that. But that was like the main thing. If I was in another team, but I'd always wake up, what would All Black do? And what does it take to be an All Black?
Awesome.
Yeah, Gilly was right. Sorry, we got about 30 or 40 questions. So I did my best to sift through them to give everyone an equal opportunity. Cool. I'd love to know, they would love to know, but I'd love to know this one as well. Who has been your biggest inspiration throughout your career?
Well, my father was. He was my best friend, my hero. And, yeah, he's the man. And he wanted me to play cricket when I was younger. I could hit a ball and that, but I said, I want to play rugby. I want to be an All Black as a kid. And he's like, well, you're not going to be big, so we need to start practicing passing. And I think a lot of my mentality in that came from those early memories of every day passing my good hand and my bad hand. And he wasn't a sportsman of such, but he just put these little habits in me from sort of 10 onwards to I had to do it every day. And then it became, I was just starting to do it by myself. And those things you remember, but more that, you know, he was just solid and caring and had my back. And yeah, like I said, he was my best friend. And I lost him last year, and that was a bummer, and I miss him. And but, you know, I've had plenty of people who have helped me and inspired me and loved me, you know, and that's a big list. And behind every great player is a big list of people that helped you. And I think they all know I'm a pretty emotional person and pretty open with my feelings. So they all know that I love them, and they will, it's not like I hide it. And always tell people and always give hugs and cheer bros, and they know who they are.
I think that's really special, man. Like, to be, you know, open and vulnerable like that, and having a dad that made me tear up a little bit. Like, that's really special that you shared that with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
What do you see? I know you're still playing, so, you know, maybe hard to answer, but we'll see. So what do you see yourself doing career-wise one day when you hang up the boots? You know, is it like full-time dad life? You can open a cafe? Have you thought about that much?
I've thought about sort of wanting to get into that maybe like skills coach role. Mm-hmm. You don't see many skills coaches get fired. And the accountability on them is not as high. But I was talking to Straws and the All Blacks, Andrew Strawbridge, and I said, I want your job one day. That looks pretty cool. And I remember being around Mick the Kick as well and Mick Byrne, and I love rugby. I love helping people. If I could stay attached to the game in that capacity, would be great. And also trying to maybe one day get into a bit of documentary content creation. I really love that side of rugby, and I think rugby's got a lot of stories that need to be told. And I've started that process already around making connections. I don't want to go the punditry way, judging the boys. I'm never a big fan of that, but, you know, staying attached to rugby in that capacity and being a dad and trying to get a bit better at golf maybe.
Did you hear?
I've heard around the traps that your golf's pretty average, Nug. So it's probably a good place to start putting some energy, mate.
Oh, not at the moment. I've been playing every second day. So.
Oh, how good. Hey, I've just got one here, Bucky. I'm going to steal this one, mate. If that's all right. But Nug, like, a common question we get from young players is how to prepare for a game mentally. And it's a tricky one, because, and so I would just love your insights or your thoughts here. But one, how do you prepare mentally? But also, do you think people should or would prepare differently? You know, so a prop, you know, how would a prop prepare for a game mentally, do you think? But then how do you prepare mentally? So yeah, just some basic techniques or key methods you've used.
I think I can only speak from sort of a halfback and back kind of view, but for me, I would visualize when the plays come out, and like sit there and visualize the play playing out, me getting there, passing the ball, who to hit, and also visualize who could be on. But then I'd also visualize certain moves have a line break opportunity, like what's my positive line. I would visualize all my kicks that I was a part of that week. And then I'd also have a mental plan around what are red flags for this game. I don't like this ref, maybe. He doesn't like me, maybe. Or the stadium or altitude. And then also players. Some players can just trigger you. So having a plan for that. But I'd always just like visualize what I need to do, my job. But it sounds bloody corny, but have you heard of MOPS? Wayne Smith got me into it, Moments of Perfection. So yeah, I'd watch highlights on YouTube on the bus ride usually of myself. So it's like a bit cringy, but it's just beautiful. Good vibes, you know? So yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So just yeah, like a lot just of people do it that just to like, yeah, that's what I did once. Or I'd watch other nines. Like, it doesn't have to be me, but I'd watch a nine carving up. I love Fru Dupree. He's my favorite. And then, yeah, so it's pretty cool. But I do, yeah, watch some mops, and that helps me heaps.
Oh, nice, mate. So, visualization of your role. Oh, look at that. We're nearly done, mate. We'll be able to go and teach him how to play golf.
Yeah. I think I've got to go in a minute. Sorry.
Okay, we'll wrap up, mate. We'll wrap up. Thanks for that, Nug. That's yeah. So basically, visualization's key. Bucky, you want to close us out, brother?
Positive ones.
Positive ones. Yeah. Mops like that. Moments of perfection.
Not Muppets. Mops. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, man. We absolutely appreciate you taking the time out of your day. We love chatting with you. And just before we go, where can people find you on the socials?
Aaron Smith, man. Just Aaron Smith, 1112, I think. Hit me up. Send some love.
Awesome.
Love it.
Thanks, Nug.
Thanks, Drew.
See you in a few weeks, Nuggy. See you, brother.
See you, my boy. Bye.